I'm Maria McKenzie, and welcome to Untamed Pen, where words and inspiration meet. Today, we're going to look at some bad girls as protagonists and discuss some of the things that inspired these characters in the author's imaginations. Lying, scheming, adultery, murder, multiple marriage, and extreme dislike of children are just a few things that make a bad girl really bad. Now, readers may not fall in love with protagonists that exhibit these negative characteristics, but at least there's never a dull moment with them. One motivation that drives bad women is control. So let's take a look at fiery Southern belle Scarlett O'Hara from Margaret Mitchell's 1936 novel Gone with the Wind. In case you haven't noticed, I really love Gone with the Wind. I love the movie. I love the novel. But anyway, Scarlett is a total control freak. We discussed her last week, and now we'll take a brief look at some of her actions. Scarlett is determined to marry Ashley Wilkes, the wrong man who's already betrothed to his cousin Melanie. And after the war, she's driven to save her plantation, Tara. Now, Scarlett marries once for spite, Charles Hamilton to make Ashley jealous, and twice for money. Frank Kennedy, her sister's fiance, and then the handsome rogue Rhett Butler. Scarlett eventually does fall in love with Rhett after she's been married to him for a while. But when she realizes this and that a life with Ashley never would have been realistic, and this is after numerous attempts to get him to dump Melanie before, during, and after her marriages. Rhett has had enough and he just finally leaves. Now, last week, I mentioned that Margaret Mitchell's own life partly inspired Scarlett's character. She and Scarlett were both shameless flirts who were in love with the wrong men. Now, Miss Mitchell, I'm sure, was not treacherous like Scarlett, so I'm assuming she had a very active imagination where Scarlett's treachery was concerned. But I did just discover at AppalachResearch.com that Margaret Mitchell based a lot of Scarlett, aside from the devious behavior, on a woman named Rebecca Latimer Felton. So here's a little of what I learned. As a teenager, Rebecca Latimer was the epitome of a Southern belle, beautiful, high-spirited, intelligent. Her 16-inch waist was the inspiration for Scarlett O'Hara's 16-inch waist. The life of Rebecca Felton closely paralleled that of Scarlett O'Hara, except that William and Rebecca Felton's marriage was a strong one. William and Rebecca initially opposed secession, but that changed when President Lincoln ordered the invasion of the South. When the fighting moved into northwest Georgia in the summer of 1864, the Feltons fled with their entire household to Macon, Georgia. Rebecca heard that both her mother and sister were critically ill with the measles contracted by the invading northern troops. She tried to reach her family by train, but a bridge had been blown up. Rebecca drove a mule wagon over 100 miles through the devastation of Sherman's march to the sea in an attempt to reach her family. While in the mule wagon, she was attacked by Yankee cavalry, but a troop of Southern cavalry came to her rescue and drove off the invaders. This event exactly matches the plot of Gone with the Wind. By the time Rebecca reached her family, her mother and sister were dead. Again, that is exactly like Gone with the Wind. Rebecca then returned to Macon. All of her family and slaves fled to a refuge in deep southeast Georgia. They almost starved to death. William and Rebecca together drove the mule wagon 250 miles northward to Cartersville to see if anything was left standing on their farm. All of Bartow County was a visage of hell. Sherman had ordered most buildings burned. As Rebecca and her family crested the hill on the road leading to the house, Rebecca stood up to see that their farm was wrecked, but the house was standing. She then uttered those famous words, "I swear by God that I will never be poor again." Of course, Scarlett said the same thing in the novel, and in the movie she said, "I'll never be hungry again." Now, during Reconstruction, William and Rebecca started a school since the Yankees had burned all the public and private school buildings, and William was elected to Congress. Later, Rebecca began buying up all of the land around their farm, eventually another 2,500 acres. She used rented convict labor to run a sawmill and iron mine, just like Scarlett in Gone with the Wind. Rebecca became very wealthy from her business activities, and William became nationally known as a progressive congressman and public speaker. So I just thought that was pretty fascinating. And if you'd like to read the whole story on Rebecca Latimer, I will leave a link on my Facebook page to that blog post. Now, let's move on to another motivation for our bad girl protagonist. The need for power, status, and money drives some bad girls like Undine Spragg, the ruthless heroine from Edith Wharton's 1913 novel, The Custom of the Country. Undine is a social climber who, through multiple marriages and divorces, experiences the pleasure of money and aristocratic titles. Eventually, she settles on marrying someone from her hometown. His money is new, and he's actually on her original social level. At this point, Undine has all the money, all that money can buy, but she wants more. At the end of the novel, she imagines what it would be like to be an ambassador's wife, a position she can never hold due to her divorces. Now, if we take a look at author Edith Wharton, we find that her paternal family, the Joneses, were prominent and wealthy, and that's where the expression keeping up with the Joneses comes from. She was born Edith Newbold Jones, so that was a new fact for me. Now, I couldn't find the exact inspiration for Undine, but one blog post I read said, Wharton's sympathies seem to lie with those older, moneyed families, yet at the same time, she's merciless towards them, exposing their ineffectuality in the face of a more brazen, unprincipled, and acquisitive culture. Now, in the novel, we see that Undine has no values except ambition, greed, and desire. She acts as if she's entitled to a rich, luxurious lifestyle. One scholar writes, her rise through the ranks of New York society from the nouveau riche demonstrates her ability to use marriage and divorce in order to achieve her desire and for social dominance. I also found this information in the publication American Literature. In 1913, divorce was certainly on Edith Wharton's mind. January saw the beginning of serial publication of The Custom of the Country, a novel that expands the portrait of the marriage market to include the crucial role of the divorce industry. Although women of Wharton's social class were groomed for the vocation of marriage, her novel proves that divorce is the logical mechanism for market expansion, providing women with the means to forge nuptial careers based not on a single liaison, but on successive and even more successful unions. Indeed, from the outset, it is evident that Undine Spragg, the market-savvy heroine of The Custom of the Country, is acutely aware of the benefits divorce might afford a disappointed wife. Husbands who aren't in the right set can be got rid of to the wife's credit. Well, okay. Now, let's move on to mental illness. That can play a big role in a bad girl's actions. Ellen Barrent from the 1944 novel Leave Her to Heaven by Ben Ames Williams is a perfect example. Ellen Barrent is mentally imbalanced. As well as having some unresolved father issues, Ellen is overly jealous for the attention of her husband, Richard Harland. She indirectly causes Richard's crippled younger brother to drown, and then when pregnant, throws herself down the stairs to cause a miscarriage. Without a baby, she won't have to share her husband's affection. Finally, when it becomes clear that Ellen's adoptive sister Ruth is attracted to Richard, Ellen commits suicide, making her death appear to be murder and framing Ruth for the crime. That is quite a story. Now, I didn't find out if Ames based Ellen on someone he knew or read about, but I did find this in Wikipedia about the movie based on the novel. The film features a number of allusions to classical Greek mythology, largely the protagonist Ellen Barron's exhibition of an Electra complex displaying an obsession over her deceased father. The sequence in which Ellen is shown carrying her father's ashes in an urn held at her waist while she rides on a horse is a visual reference to the Greek goddess Hippolyta and the magical girdle bestowed upon her by her father Ares, the god of war. Scholar S.T. Joshi likens the character of Ellen to a siren, a mythical water creature who lured sailors to their deaths. This allusion is supported by film noir scholar Imogene Sarah Smith, who notes that Ellen is frequently associated with water and shown swimming, like a mermaid, cold-blooded and alien, preying on a hapless human male. Ellen's scheming alludes to Medea, an intelligent and cunning figure in Greek mythology who, by some mythological accounts, willfully murders her children. Well, I have never read the novel Leave It to Heaven, but the movie is fantastic and I highly recommend it. I'll put a link in it on my Facebook page. Now, we're going to move on to our last bad girl protagonist. In Masquerade, book 2 of my Unchained trilogy series, Lavinia Hargraves is the star of the show. She's actually introduced in the first part of the trilogy, Escape. In that story, Lori is a slave girl and Daniel Taylor, the white man who falls in love with her and helps her to escape. Eventually, they have 3 children, Lavinia being the youngest. Lavinia, who passes as white, despises her sister, who is kind and good, and hates her mother for being black and a former slave. At 17, Lavinia runs off with 54-year-old Vernon Hargraves only because of what he can do for her. Although Vernon truly loves Lavinia, the feeling isn't mutual on her part, and from that storyline, it's clear to see that Lavinia isn't the nicest person around. And Lavinia's dream was to become an actress, and as I said, when she was 17, she runs off with Vernon Hargraves. He owned a theater company, and he could give her, you know, her dream. So, anyway, if Lavinia had lived today, she probably would have been diagnosed with narcissistic personality disorder, which according to MayoClinic.com is a mental disorder in which people have an inflated sense of their own importance and a deep need for admiration. Those with narcissistic personality disorder believe that they're superior to others and have little regard for other people's feelings. But behind this mask of ultra-confidence lies a fragile self-esteem, vulnerable to the slightest criticism. Lavinia's personality combined with her actions make for some rather interesting situations, to say the least. Now, someone asked me recently what inspired Lavinia and if I did some type of character analysis. Well, I didn't, and I didn't even know what narcissistic personality disorder was when I wrote the story. As a matter of fact, a neurologist friend of mine told me that that's what Lavinia's character sounded like. Now, what did inspire me in writing Lavinia's character was some of Ellen Barron from Leave Her to Heaven, who we just talked about, and maybe just other mean people that I've known throughout my life. I'm a pleaser by nature, and I really never want to hurt anybody's feelings. So I just imagined what it would be like to be as mean as possible based on mean people that I've known and read about. I did do a lot of research on theater people at that time, and that helped me develop her life in that world. But her personality was mainly my vivid imagination. I mean, let's face it, mean people are really fun to write. Now, I would like to take a few minutes to read an excerpt from Masquerade highlighting Lavinia's devious nature. And I'm going to set the scene briefly. Lavinia lives the life of her dreams while sharing her marriage bed with Vernon Hargraves, a man she doesn't love. However, her seduction by actor Kenneth Tyler creates a tumultuous turn of events. After a dress rehearsal of Shakespeare's Antony and Cleopatra, Kenneth decides to proposition Lavinia. Now, keep in mind, Lavinia is married to their boss, theater owner Vernon Hargraves, and Kenneth is in a common law relationship with Jenny Green, who a former actress, and they have 2 children together. Okay, so that just kind of sets the scene. You can kind of imagine the characters. So I'm going to go ahead and do a reading for Masquerade, book two of the Unchained Trilogy. And Kenneth has a Cockney accent, so I'm going to try to do that. It's probably not the greatest Cockney accent, so please excuse it. Masquerade, book two of the Unchained Trilogy. And this is New York City, 1894. Kenneth rushed to his dressing room. After shedding his tunic and war gear, he changed into his day clothes, a black suit and vest. Grabbing his bowler hat, he walked down the hall to Lavinia's dressing room. Lavinia couldn't possibly love Vernon, Kenneth thought. The old bloke was close to 60 and probably only lasted long enough to please himself. Lavinia, at 21, was young and vibrant. However, she'd never been with a young, virile male and experienced the act as it was supposed to be. Putting his ear to Lavinia's dressing room, he only heard female voices, Lavinia's and her maid Amy's. Kenneth smiled at the memory of Amy. She'd been a sweet little piece, quiet and not much to look at, but she'd been a tigress in the bedroom. Kenneth walked to the wings in search of Vernon, but only encountered a few cast and crew members on their way out. Vernon was nowhere to be found. Good, Kenneth said to himself as he walked back to Lavinia's door. She was a lusty, sensual woman. She just didn't know it yet. Her passion hadn't been unleashed because she'd lacked an adequate teacher. On stage, she'd project warmth in her voice and actions, but any physicality between them, in Kenneth's opinion, seemed forced, stiff, and tense. The audience didn't see that or sense it, but he could, and he could make her a better performer if given the opportunity to ignite the fire within her. He knocked at her dressing room door. Lavinia, before our first night, he said through the closed door, I'd like to discuss a way to bring greater depth to our performances. Wait just a moment, Lavinia replied. Seconds later, she invited him in as Amy finished buttoning the back of her turquoise dress. Amy flashed Kenneth a flirtatious smile, which he ignored. No use leading on the poor girl. He had no desire to revive their short-lived affair. There were greener pastures to explore. Amy rolled her eyes, then let out an irreverent snort as she adjusted the fabric over Lavinia's bustle. Lavinia checked her reflection as she asked Kenneth to have a seat on a satin chair near her dressing table. When she turned from the mirror, Amy brought over a large hat decorated with white stuffed birds and ostrich plumes. So, Kenneth, Lavinia said, just what do you suggest we do to improve our performances? Lavinia, he glanced at Amy, who was about to assist her with the hat. Amy shot him a nasty glare. I'd like to speak to you alone, if I may, Kenneth said. Lavinia hesitated. Of course. She took the hat from her maid. Amy, if you wouldn't mind. She motioned her to the door, and Amy trudged out, turning her nose up at Kenneth as she passed him, then loudly shut the door behind her. I take it Amy doesn't like you, Lavinia said, bending to place the hat on a matching chair opposite Kenneth. I'm not here to discuss Amy. All right, Lavinia stood tall, placing her hands on her hips. Tell me what you had in mind. Before Kenneth began, he took a deep breath. In all his years of philandering, he'd never had the gall to approach a boss's wife. But if he and Lavinia were to continue to perform as a romantic couple, they needed to do something to enhance the magic of their partnership. Where's Vernon? He asked cautiously. He went home. He was quite exhausted after today's rehearsal. Kenneth rose from his chair. After tossing his bowler hat to the vacant seat, he swaggered toward Lavinia. I haven't quite known how to bring this up. Audiences love us together, but our performances lack. We could make them better if... Lavinia raised a brow as she waited for him to finish. If what? He sidled close to her. If you would unsheathe my dagger, he said slowly. Confused, Lavinia said. There's that line again. Just what do you mean by it? I mean, I'd like to slip my key into your lock. But I've already let you in here. You don't need a key.
I take it you've never heard of a double entendre. Lavinia blinked her eyes in question. A double what? Kenneth laughed. She so wanted to be worldly, yet was still an innocent in so many ways. What's so funny? Lavinia asked sharply. I won't be about the bush any longer, Lavinia. I believe that your performance, as well as mine, would vastly improve if we made love. Lavinia's eyes widened. Raising her chin, she said, Kenneth, I'm a married woman. Yes, Lavinia, I know. But you're married to an old man that you don't love. She backed away from him slightly. My marriage is none of your business. Your marriage lacks passion, and no, that's none of my business. But improving my performance and yours is my business. Lavinia, this is the perfect way. He moved nearer to her, all the while gesturing dramatically with his hands. We can only show but so much of our love on stage, but if you experience being with me in a way that can't be displayed to the audience, the feeling and depth of emotion we have behind closed doors can transcend to the stage. Trust me. This was a ploy he'd used many times with his leading ladies, so many times that he'd actually come to believe it, and it usually worked. Has Vernon ever made you scream in ecstasy? Lavinia's face contorted in shock, but then a questioning gaze flickered across it. How dare you ask me such a question? Why, my marriage is a sacred union. I've never known you to be so self-righteous, Kenneth smiled. And you're a much better actress than you're pretending to be now. You're not offended by what I've said, but you are curious, and you never did answer my question. Has Vernon ever kissed you like this? Kenneth grabbed Lavinia around the waist, pulling her close. He held her tightly, kissing her with searing passion and pressing his body firmly against hers. Half-heartedly, she tried to push him away. Kenneth, please, Lavinia gasped. With pleasure, he replied. Kenneth knew she wanted more, and he kissed her again before she could finish her feigned protest. Finally, her body melted into his, and Kenneth felt victorious as she returned his embrace and his kiss. When he pulled his lips from hers, Lavinia was breathless. Disentangling herself from his arm, she said, That's not what I meant. But it is what you wanted. Kenneth said slyly. I know Vernon's never kissed you like that, and he's never touched you in places that could make you wildly euphoric, has he? Lavinia was silent for a moment. You think you could? Apparently, she decided not to fake insult any longer. Kenneth smiled. Most definitely. Lavinia, I know how to play a woman like a fine instrument, and you, my darling, are no less than a Stradivarius. Lavinia, we're magic together now. He observed her mulling things over, then opened his arms in an exaggerated theatrical gesture. Just think what we'd be if... Eyeing him cynically, she crossed her arms. I'm no fool, Kenneth. You just want to sleep with me, that's all. Lavinia turned away from him and looked in the mirror. After checking her hair, she picked up the large feathered hat. I won't deny that. I'm dying to sleep with you, but that's not all. He approached Lavinia from behind, took the hat from her hands, and threw it back to the chair. Gently placing one arm around her waist, he said, I swear, Lavinia, our performances would be even more explosive. He moved her hair with his other hand and kissed her neck. Volcanic, in fact, if we made love. When she leaned against him, Kenneth moved his hands to her breast. I have a suite at the Imperial Hotel where we can rehearse. Meet me there tomorrow at 2:00. He pulled a brass key from his pocket. After placing it in her hand, he said, Dress plainly so no one will recognize you and use the side entrance. We wouldn't want to stir up a scandal. He continued to kiss her neck and worked his way toward her ear. Slowly, Lavinia turned to gaze at him. I'll take what you've said under advisement. Kenneth looked at her aghast. You sound like we've been discussing a business proposal. Haven't we, Lavinia said. If I do agree to what you're proposing, I have everything to lose, and so do you if Vernon ever finds out. But darling, I won't tell a soul. Discretion is my middle name. Kenneth flashed a sneaky smile. If Vernon or anyone suspects something, just deny it. That's how the game is played, he winked. You're a great actress. You can be convincing. Lavinia shook her head, grinning wickedly. Why on earth does poor little Jenny put up with you? Forget about poor little Jenny. Don't give her a second thought. I never do, he laughed. Well, Lavinia hesitated, I may or I may not show up tomorrow. This is a rather weighty decision for me. So you'll just have to wait and see. Flabbergasted, Kenneth exclaimed. But if you don't come, you'll never know what you've been missing, and you won't be with just any bloke. You'll be with me, Kenneth Tyler. Lavinia yawned. If you've said all you have to say, Kenneth, you may leave now. And that concludes my excerpt from Masquerade, Book 2 of the Unchained Trilogy. Thank you so much for listening. Please visit me at www.mariemackenziewrites.com and visit my Facebook page for links to today's podcast. Until next time, this is Maria Mackenzie.